Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the VRO. Today is Wednesday, June 5th, 2012, and it is 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm VRO Jess, and I'll be your host tonight. And as always, the ever-present Amy McCracken will be running our switchboard. How long was that pause in the beginning? I felt like that ran
That pause forever. Was, yeah, it was long. It was longer than normal.
Yeah, I was like,
And you know what I just realized? Normally, when our guest calls in, I go and I screen the call and stuff like that. I can't do that.
Oh, no.
Because I got you on the switchboard. We called in together on Skype.
Oh, no. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Next time, you'll use your brain.
It's been a rough week.
And no, it's been an awesome week. We have had so many wonderful guests from the movie For the Love of Money.
It's true. And the movie is great. I mean, I've been seeing Joshua Bitton twittering pictures of the premiere and some of the cast members and stuff like that. And I'm really hoping that it went well. We'll probably have to ask our next guest about that. I'm sure she went to the premiere last night, but it premiered in L.A. For the Love of Money is kind of a gangster movie with a heart, and it's very family-oriented. I'm getting a message here that we have our next guest on the line. So before I pick her up, she can hear me. But before I pick her up, I just want to introduce her a little bit. We, again, continue our interviews this week with the cast and crew of the movie For the Love of Money, which premiered yesterday evening in L.A. From there, it is released in select theaters nationwide. And so far, we've talked to director Ellie Kanner Zuckerman, Edward Furlong, Jonathan Lipnicki, Joshua Bitton, and Richard Gunn. So we round up our week-long coverage for The Love of Money with a special guest tonight. Our guest is most known for her roles as Maggie Malone in the movie The Third Wish and as Jules in Fish Without a Bicycle. She has also been seen on TV series such as Married with Children, The Single Guy, Party of Five, and many, many more. She is here tonight to talk about her involvement in For the Love of Money, and the VRO is very happy to welcome actress, producer, and writer Jenna Mattinson. How are you, Jenna?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Did you go to
the premiere? I didn't know I would get to be a voyeur and listen in without talking.
Yes, we decided to call in via Skype this time and realized at the last minute that we were unable to screen your call off air because we were both on the same call. So it would take us off air before we were able to screen you. So I apologize for the long wait.
Oh, no, it's fine.
So did you go to the premiere of For the Love of Money last night?
I did. It was flawless. I have to say, it was the event, first of all, was just, I got there and I was like, wow, is this for us? And it was an amazing turnout. We had about 550 people in the theater, and it was over capacity. And,
wow.
You know, just a lot of people. And they loved the movie. It was quite a, you know, it's different watching something with an audience. And, you know, I unfortunately couldn't be in the theater watching the film with the audience, but I got a lot of feedback from people just saying that, you know, they erupted in laughter where they were supposed to, and they, you know, felt something where they were supposed to, and you got little gasps of, you know. And as a screenwriter, you know, and a producer, that's really all you can hope for, is that people walk away understanding, you know, what you've written, and you've kind of hit the key moments and made them feel something, made them walk away feeling something. When they come out of the theater and they're all starry-eyed and excited, then you kind of know that they had a good time. So I was thrilled.
Yes, and actually, we've been talking, Amy and I have been talking all week, late last week and all of this week about the movie and the fact that we were so lucky that we actually got to see the movie. They sent us screeners to watch. So we were really surprised because when we got the movie, we didn't really know anything about it. So I started watching the movie, and I loved the movie, but then it was so much more powerful at the end when you find out that it's a true story. And how amazing that struggle for the American... the American dream and family and trying to stay out of trouble when it just keeps finding you over and over again. It was just a surreal experience to see the pictures of the actual people as well as, you know, the screen against the screenshots of the movie. It was just great.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad you liked it. I mean, you know, really what we wanted to show was every person has in us, you know, the American dream, the struggle and strive for, you know, to have everything, to have family and success and all those things. And it's just about figuring out how to get there without selling your soul to the devil, without,
right.
And I don't mean the devil in a biblical sense. I mean the devil
right.
in a, you know, universal sense. And I think, you know, it's funny because somewhere along the way, I had a person look at the screenplay to give me notes, and they said, this isn't a message kind of movie. You shouldn't be writing a message movie. And this is a gangster movie. And I said, well, you know, why can't it be both? Why do gangster movies only have to be about people killing each other and money? Why can't it be the fact of the true story is everyone who did wrong died gruesomely.
Right. That's
and everyone
true.
Who did right ended up with this wonderful life and family. And that's, you know, that's life. That's the reality of what happened. And so I wanted to make sure that universal truth came out where you get that little nugget of gold of like, hey, yes, this was a true story. And isn't it great that sometimes things really work out for the good guys? And so...
Yes, I agree with that. Unfortunately, though, before that happens, the character of Yoni kind of gets pulled into this. I apologize for the crackling. I'm not sure if it's on my end or not.
It's not. I can't hear it.
Okay, then I can ignore it on my end. The character of Yoni unfortunately gets pulled into this horrible situation where you don't know if he's going to live or die, and he really truly has nothing to do with the situation. He's kind of just this sweet, innocent bystander, and he gets pulled into it. I really felt for that character, especially when I found out that it really happened. So it was unfortunate, but luckily enough, you know, nothing too bad happened. But it really had the potential to be a very fatal situation.
Well, you know, we had the real Yoni on set
yes,
when we were
yes,
shooting.
I did.
And
Isaac as well, correct? He was the executive
did.
Producer.
And, you know, it was really interesting because, you know, in the character of Levi was his brother. And when he gets gunned down in the movie, you know, that really happened. And so I remember going in with the editor and editing that, you know, sort of brainchild moment of the slow motion and the Phil Collins song. And everyone thought I was insane. And I went in and I was like, no, it's going to be in slow-mo and we're going to put Phil Collins in the air. And they're like, are you mad? Have you lost your mind? And I said, no, I think this is right. This is going to be right. And I went in with Carl Hirsch and we were working on this sequence of scenes. And, he came in because he had been, you know, he was still around and hadn't left for Israel yet. And I said, can you watch something for me? And he watched that scene and he got tears in his eyes. And he said that his hair, you know, on his arm stood on end. And he was like, that's how it happened. That's how my brother died. And you guys really captured it. And it was just such an awesome moment for me to realize that, you know, this is something real. And yes, we, you know, added things for dramatic effect and to keep, you know, the audience interested. But at the end of the day, he bought it. You know, I mean, the guy who lived it bought it. And I just thought that was so cool. It was just such an awesome moment as a filmmaker.
It is. And now tell us how you got involved with the project in the first place. You hoped to write the screenplay, correct?
I did. When I came on board, Isaac's, you know, the fundamentals of his story were kind of there, the skeleton of the story. And some of it wasn't very exciting, frankly. And I was like, well, you know, let's scratch the surface here. Let's see where has it gone awry? You know, where has it gone to a place where you almost went to the dark side? And we sat, you know, at nights and, you know, drinking coffee, looking at each other's eyes going, you know, tell me what's going on, what happened? And, you know, one of the great things that came out of those sessions was the jewelry heist, which is one of my favorite sequences of the movie. And, you know, it didn't, of course, happen the way I wrote it. They didn't drive in a car and sing, you know, I Ran.
I was going to say, because I think that was the most hysterical scene. I actually laughed out loud, and we talked to Richard about that yesterday or the day before, and I think it was the day before. We talked to Richard about that and how ridiculously funny that was, but how much you needed it in the movie. Because, and his justification was it was perfectly normal because, you know, the character Vince, pretty much it was like going to work, you know, you just kind of went to work. What do you do when you go to work? You know, you sing to the radio, you get ready for your day, and it was just kind of, he was so used to being this guy who, like, bashed people's skulls in, and this is what he did, that it was no big deal, so.
Well, it's funny, because when I wrote that scene, it was just a scene on paper that says three guys are in the car, and one of them starts tapping his foot, and the other one starts humming along, and then the third one starts, you know, singing to the song. Everybody thought I'd gone insane. They're like, you can't do that. They're going to a jewelry heist. It has to be intense. They have to be nervous and all this stuff. And I said, no. You know, the way I write, I always describe it as the John Lennon quote, life is what's happening while you're making other plans.
Right.
It's like not everything has to be on the nose all the time. The only people that act that way are actors playing a scene. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
In real life, people aren't always talking about what's happening because they're avoiding. You know, I had the pleasure of working with Jeffrey Tambor in this movie, who was actually my acting coach. And he played the character of Mr. Solomon, and, you know, he's been in a lot of stuff.
Right, yes.
Really wise, wise actor. And he said, you know, actors are the ones who want to play the scenes. People are the ones who do creative hiding. They, you know, they'll play with the salt shaker on the table rather than look someone in the eye when they're breaking up with them. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly.
And that's kind of what I like to bring to my writing, is to not hammer people over the head with it and give them the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, even if they're watching a shoot 'em up gangster movie, that they're still smart enough to get the subtleties and the nuances. And I'm really, really glad that it seems like the audiences so far have, you know, been able to get that and really appreciate it.
It was fantastic. I mean, from start to finish, I really felt for Isaac after Mickey was basically his business was being ruined, and he was afraid as to whether or not he was going to get killed. You know, like he messed with the wrong person, and he found that out. And when he realized that he messed with the wrong person and he had that kind of moment in the apartment where he didn't know what he was going to do, it was so real and so like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Do I get out of town? Do I hide? What do I do? Kind of feeling. And you really felt for the guy. You were really panicked, like, uh-oh, this is not going to end well. And I think it's something to say for the family, for Isaac's family, as well as the writing in the film, where really at the beginning of the movie, you kind of have this idea that it's a gangster movie. This is not going to end well. And it was a pleasant surprise to find out that although some people did pass on in the movie, most of them were bad guys, but that the good kind of won out. And you so very, very rarely see that in real life. That's kind of like a movie thing, but to then find out that it was a true story and that everything
is
pretty much
like,
okay. Like you're so
lucky. It's
like
Star Wars, you know what I mean? But in real life, like
right.
Darth Vader lost, you know, and that's Darth Vader being Mickey Levine in this circumstance. And it just, I just think it's so cool. I love that element of it. I mean, look, I'm a fairy tale girl. I always have been. I grew up that way. One of my favorite movies of all time is The Little Mermaid. And I'm not ashamed of that. It's because those elements of good versus evil, right versus wrong, those sort of wholesome qualities and values, I think are so missing in a lot of our movies today.
Right.
And at the end of the day, it's like, that's what we're all about, aren't we? Aren't we all just trying to be good people and do the right thing and live good quality lives?
Yes,
and
true.
So I'm sure there's a lot of criticism for films like that tend to, that, you know, will show the brighter side of things, or, you know, in this case, I certainly wasn't trying to show the bright side of things. I was just showing the reality of, you know, essentially like karma. And you know, some people I'm sure won't like that because they want to believe that the world is seedier and worse and that there can't be, you know, happy endings, but there are happy endings. And that's what we all want.
Yeah, there was a class that I took in I think it was either high school or college, and they talked about you know, the archetypal characters in literature. And it was funny, when I was watching the movie, I really felt that Levi embodied the archetype of the hero, where, you know, he has to go through this journey and he has all of these challenges and obstacles that he has to go through, and, you know, he is tempted by the dark side, and it was just very...
You're talking about Isaac, the character of Isaac?
That's what I meant. What did I say?
Okay. I was like, well, Levi kind of was a bad guy, actually.
That's not what I meant.
He actually
meant...
got more than tempted. He did it.
Yes, he did. No, I meant Isaac, where he was like the classic hero, almost... You know, in history, all of them do that, like the Greek mythology and stuff like that. So you have, like, Hercules and all those people who, you know, have the classic hero mythology. But Isaac is, you know, a present day. I mean, I don't mean to put him up on a pedestal, but, you know, it was just amazing.
You don't
amazing
mean to
story.
Wax poetic about the man.
No,
though
no,
I'm sure
I'm
if
rambling,
he's listening,
no,
he'll be
sorry.
Thrilled. He'll be
yeah. So you've been an actress, you've been a producer, you've done writing. What do you prefer to do more?
Writing is it's the gift, you know, it's the thing that puts a smile on my face. And I call it like taking dictation. I don't even know where it comes from, but it just comes from somewhere, and it plants itself in my mind, and then I start moving my fingers. And then the next thing you know, I just finished writing a novel in December called Messiah, that's now going to be made into a movie. And I finished the screenplay about 4 days ago. And it was just one of those things that it popped into my head, and it was a story that I wanted to tell, and it just kind of told itself. And it's based in historical fact, so I did have to do some research for it. But I love writing. I mean, there's nothing like it to me. I also love producing, frankly, because of the control that you have, the creative control, because the buck stops with you, you know? And, you know, I had to make a lot of concessions on the film, like you always do. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, you know?
Compromise.
But, Yeah, it's a compromise. It's a, that's what you do. And but at the end of the day, when you're the producer, you get a lot more hands-on control of your product, and that's something that, you know, as a writer, is so valuable. Like, I have a TV movie right now that I wrote that I have absolutely no control over what happens to it because I'm not producing it. And that's really nerve-wracking for me is, you know, what are they going to do with it? How are they going to... The only great thing is that actually Ellie Kanner is going to be directing it. We kind of sold the... I sold the idea, and she had worked with the company before, and so we told them we wanted to do this together, and they hired her as the director, so it was great.
Great. That's great, because now you already have something to go off of. You've already worked on a project. You already know that you mesh. And
exactly. And I know I can trust her. I know that she's going to be really respectful to the script, and, you know, she was awesome to work with. We were, like, fused at the hip. We were, like, one person. I mean, it was crazy. And I knew Ellie before. I actually saw her at a barbecue at her house the week before we were making our final director choice, and there were, like, three really good candidates. And I saw her at a barbecue. I was like, hey, you should throw your hat into the ring. You know, like, no thought in my mind that she would get the job. You know, I just didn't even think she would. Not that she wasn't great, but I just didn't think, frankly, that they'd pick a woman since they'd already... you know, picked a woman as the writer and producer of a gangster film. And when they picked her, and, you know, I tried to stay pretty neutral about the whole thing. I was thrilled. I thought, oh, my gosh, I think this is the first gangster film ever to be written, produced, and directed by women. And, you know, how cool is that?
That's, and it was done well, you know. It wasn't, it was nothing to sneeze at, so... amazing. Now, you mentioned that you have Messiah is going to be made into a movie. Do you know approximately when that's going to happen?
Well, Messiah is a very large budget, like an epic film. And so, you know, my guess would be that we're probably a good year and a half away from it. But it is a novel, so I'm hoping that the novel comes out sooner than that. And my TV movie gets shot in September. And then I have another project called The Paramore, which is based on true events of the haunted Paramore Mansion.
Ooh, that sounds right up my alley.
It's so cool. It is the coolest story. And so that's something I'm working on right now, actually, with Ken Topolsky, who directed me on Party of Five, became an executive producer on For the Love of Money, and now we're going to be working together again on The Paramore.
That's fantastic.
So
I hope that you will keep us updated as to all three of the projects that you're working on, because we'd love to have you back and maybe speak to some other people involved in the project as well. But definitely to keep, especially with the novel, it's not out yet, correct, the novel?
It's not out yet, no. It's I'm really excited about it. I can honestly say I feel like it's the best thing I've ever written. And,
I'm a big book reader. So
it's about 500 pages, and it's pretty intense. Ellie read it, and she was one of my, they call it a beta reader, like someone who you know, reads for you and gives you feedback, and she's very, very passionate about the project and very supportive. So I'll keep you guys posted.
We do have a book show, and we have a lot of TV shows and things that we do recaps for. So I think we'd be really interested in reading the book and maybe having you come on and talk about it if you'd be interested.
Oh, great. Yes, absolutely.
And we have a lot of, actually, my next question ties right into that. We do have a lot of budding writers who listen to some of our interviews with writers and executive producers and behind the scenes type of things. Do you have any advice for people who are looking to break into writing for Hollywood?
I would say write every day. Write, because that's what writers do. Don't sit around talking about writing with your friends in a coffee shop. Just write. And honestly, you know, they say it's like that awesome phrase that they used in Field of Dreams, you build it and they will come. And that's exactly how it happened for me. I wrote my first screenplay with not a thought in my head about getting it made. I wrote it because it meant something to me, and it was visceral, and it was a cathartic experience. And the next thing you know, someone wanted to make it. So,
are you a stream of consciousness writer, or do you have an outlet?
What's his name? I'm saying what's his name, and he's like one of the best, you know, biggest writers. Stephen King calls them pantsers. You either make an outline, or you're a pantser, fly by the seat of your pants. And I'm certainly a pantser. It's like, for the most part, I fundamentally know where a story is going to go when I sit down to write, as far as the beginning and the middle and the end. But wherever else it goes, honestly, the characters take me there. They show you where they want to go. They're alive to me. You know, I know that sounds kind of crazy and schizophrenic. But
no, we've heard that. We've heard that many times. So you're not the first one to say that. It seems to be a common thread amongst writers where the characters basically take on a life of their own. And
they do.
Yeah.
And I love them. Like, I really do. I fall in love with them. And I write for them. And I write, you know, the way each one of them talks is different. In my head, it's such an amazing and visceral experience to take a blank page and then pour everything that comes out of your mind onto it and create these voices and these distinct characters and then get to cast actors to play them and then watch them say your lines. And then get to edit it all together and see an audience react to it is like, you know, it's kind of like building a house, I guess. You build the foundation and then you hire the crew and, you know, and then you see it and you put that final little touch of paint on and hang the door knocker. And everyone comes for the party and you're like, wow, this is awesome. And you know, what I would say to your screenwriting folks out there, your budding filmmakers, is it's as great as you think it is. So keep working and get your ticket. Get your ticket to the ball, your invitation to the party. Because though it's hard work, it's probably one of the most rewarding jobs I could think of.
Okay, that's some great advice. Well, we don't want to keep you too long because I know you're very busy. We really appreciated you coming on and talking about For the Love of Money. Like we said, it did premiere yesterday, so congratulations on that. And it will be released in select theaters nationwide. And then Ellie tells me it's going to be released on video on demand and iTunes and Amazon and all that probably in about September or so. So hopefully.
Yeah, I think Lionsgate said it's the third quarter, so that'll be like August, September, October-ish.
Oh, good. So I've been telling people all over to, if they can see it on the big screen, go see it. Travel a little farther, go see it on the big screen.
Yeah, It's the AMC theaters. If you go to our website, fortheloveofmoneythemovie.com, it has a link for the theaters to go to. And it's really worth seeing on the big screen if you can. It's really a much different experience than watching it on a laptop or your TV.
I agree. So thank you so much, Jenna, for joining us. We do have one favor to ask before we let you go. We didn't get a chance to ask you before you went on air, but normally we ask all of our guests that we interview to give us a sound clip on air, just basically introducing yourself and saying you're listening to the VRO. So just your name and you're listening to the VRO. And what we do with that clip is at the end, we're going into our fourth year of broadcasting. Every year we have an anniversary show, and we put all those clips together for our listeners to hear all of the amazing guests that we've had over the past year.
I'll be happy to do it.
Thank you.
I'm Jenna Madison, and you're listening to the VRO.
Thank you so much, Jenna, and best of luck. And please keep in contact with us regarding the other projects that you're working on, because we're excited and I'm sure we'd like to have you come back again.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, guys, I hope that you enjoyed the interview. I think Amy has put the phone down and walked away.
No, I'm here.
I didn't get any response. So
well,
like,
I did walk away for a couple of seconds, and then when I came back, you were already going into it.
Yeah,
so.
I figured. So I hope everybody enjoyed the interview. The writer, the writing information, I mean, we've often had many writers on, and I know that we have a lot of people who like to write and who like to find out about how to break into the business. Jenna had some really awesome advice, and she had some similar advice to other writers. So, you know, if different people who are successful keep saying the same thing, it's really worth taking another look at their advice, because obviously they're all doing the same thing and they're all very successful. So
exactly.
Yeah. So, but she's working on a ton of stuff, so I'm really excited for her to come back again. We have to keep up with her regarding the release of the book, Messiah, and the project. They're making a full-scale movie out of it, a feature movie out of it. And then she's got two TV movies coming out, and one of them is a paranormal movie that I cannot wait to talk about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Jess, it was an awesome week doing all these interviews with you.
It was, and I'm exhausted, and it's time to go.
Oh, well, you know what? I just booked you 5 more. Just joking.
Oh, my God.
Come Monday, you'll have 5 more. But
oh, yeah. I love doing the interviews, but I'm exhausted.
But I've got to go, and I will talk to you guys soon.
Okay, goodbye, guys.
Bye. Where's the damn hang-up button?